Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Well, it's a Christmas miracle.
It is. We're here. We're
making. It's not really a Christmas miracle. It's just Christmas.
Almost.
It's coming. It's next week.
The Christmas miracle is they stuck the landing.
They stuck the landing. Okay, we're going to talk about Watchmen later.
Yes, yes.
We're going to talk about Watchmen in this podcast.
And I apologize already because I know sticking the landing should not be the barometer for quality,
even though
we have in the past kind of made it as such.
Each episode was better than the one that came before it. So you expect the last one to be really good. We also haven't seen Star Wars yet.
I think. We have not.
So let's acknowledge.
I haven't even got my tickets. We have like 9 people staying in the house over Christmas.
Oh, you've made poor choices.
Wow.
I mean, it's nice to have friends, I guess. But Star Wars comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it tomorrow.
Neither am I. I'm going on Saturday. Thanks, Norm, by the way.
No problem. I bought tickets, and I was able to relinquish the tickets so Will could buy those seats.
Oh, nice.
In a coordinated app effort.
It was,
you literally, like, you did as he did, so...
Yes.
We were at a party on Saturday night together, and I was like, I don't have tickets for Star Wars. Like, Norm looked at Danica and was like, we can solve this problem. And everybody got out their phones. We synchronized the 4 purchases simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
It's one of those things where the tickets are tied to your name. So
I can just hand him
physical tickets.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it would be simpler to do in the old days.
Before the services.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, last week, one of the things we didn't get a chance to talk about, complete omission on our part, was the passing, of course, of Carol Spinney.
The amazing Muppeteer performer who spent decades making the world a better place. Portraying Big Bird.
Mm-hmm. Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch.
And Oscar the Grouch. And did he also do Snuffleupagus or was that Jim?
I thought Snuffleupagus was someone else, but I don't know.
Okay.
But
yes.
If you haven't, one of the first things we talked about when we talked about the Muppets here in the early, early days of Still Untitled was you explained how that Carol Spinney Big Bird puppet works.
Right.
And I was just like, that can't possibly be it. And then you go and look at the cutaway.
Right.
And it's incredible. Yeah. His hands up, his head's down. He's looking at a TV that's in Big Bird's stomach. He's moving one arm with the other hand.
Yeah.
And then somebody else is operating the other arm from presumably behind.
Sometimes it's just like a Bear in the Big Blue House. It's on a pivot to the other hand. So it looks natural.
It's incredible how much humanity came out in a character
with such a technically challenged puppeteering job, especially for decades.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to meet Carol Spinney at Silicon Valley Comic Con a couple of years ago, and he was, as every account of him has attested, the very picture of gracious, lovely, attentive, and sweet, as you wanted Big Bird's creator to be.
There were a number of people who had profiled or interviewed the Sesame Street, Children's Television Workshop or Carol Spinney specifically, who kind of shared stories about meeting him. And the one that I loved the most, I wish I should have looked up to see who it was before we started, so I apologize. But it basically told us the story of going to do this profile on CTW.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What was that?
Yelling on the street. Oh, cool. Sorry. They basically told the story of him going in to interview this person and then sending him over to Carol Spinney first. And he'd taken off the top of Big Bird and was just wearing the legs and was resting. And he said in the Big Bird voice, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And the reporter just started crying.
Right.
Just burst into tears. Right.
Yeah. Certain people have that effect. I mean, it's the same. This year was also the year that we lost Peter Mayhew. So we're talking about character performers.
Who's that?
Peter Mayhew.
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
Characters
so sad. Yeah.
That were larger than life and big parts of our lives and their childhoods.
Well, and these performances that outlive the performers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I implore
you. That extended way, way, way beyond. Yeah.
You know, we had a chance 2 years ago to go to the exhibit at the Museum of Moving Image
in New York,
Jim Henson
exhibit. Yes. Which is still, it's a permanent exhibit at the museum at MoMA, and it's really worth taking a trip out there to go see it. It's incredible,
and it has one of the Big Birds, and I think it was bigger than all of us imagined standing in front of it, even behind glass.
Yeah. All I know is how it compares to a Studebaker, so it's like.
It is amazing how long he was able to perform that character. It is truly astounding.
Well, and the process for training his understudy, his replacement, was a like a 10-year process. 10, was 12 it really? Year, they were working together for an incredibly long time.
Wow.
All the Muppet performers are there. They're all treasures. And when, again, also recommendation for the documentary that Frank Oz.
Muppet Guys Talking. Muppet
Guys Talking. Yeah, that is
super, super fun. Watching. And having hung out with most of those Muppet guys at various different things, hanging out with them is exactly like that. They are incredibly smart, incredibly sweet. They are constantly insulting each other in the most hilariously sweet, egregious way.
Oh, boy.
I will say, I know you haven't seen Knives Out yet.
No, I have not.
So this is not necessarily a spoiler, but it is another reason to see it is that Frank Oz has a part in it.
What?
That,
yeah. He has a cameo.
He's the lawyer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I never... Okay. Yeah.
And he is it's a wonderful traditional Frank Oz performance, or maybe. So he's clearly having a wonderful time in that role.
He's chewed some scenes there.
Yes. Every now and then, I mean, you remember he's the American consulate representative in American Werewolf in London.
Wow.
He shows up at the hospital to talk to David.
This is exactly in line with that type of role.
Right.
Just in and out.
Showing up to be a minor functionary who's kind of funny.
Well, yes, exactly it.
It's a character actor who, a character part that's kind of odd, like in a really interesting way.
Oh, and I remember watching American Werewolf in London, and I was such an adept of the Muppets. I already knew. I was like, oh, that's Frank Oz. That's very exciting.
You should see Knives Out. It's really good.
I will. We don't get out to the movies a lot, and also I've been watching a crap ton of television.
It turns out.
So this is the part where we're going to talk about Watchmen, and that's
can we also talk about the? We can also talk a little bit about Mandalorian, which
yes, I have not seen the last episode.
Okay, now so we should do a spoiler cast of Mandalorian once the series wraps.
Yes,
I think maybe 10 episodes,
Like that.
9 or 10.
Yeah. It is early this week because of the Rise of Skywalker.
Oh,
so I think we get the episode
out of the way.
Before, not on Friday, because of course Disney wants people in theaters on Friday.
I think it's actually next.
Oh, they push it a week.
I think they pushed it a half week, so it's like the 23rd.
Oh, so we get Wednesday and Friday of next week,
something like that.
It's a Christmas miracle.
All right.
I'm curious to see if they're going to try to tie it into the new series of movies because it takes place between the old one, the original trilogy, and the current trilogy. And that's why they're pushing stuff.
A very mastermindy thing for them to do.
Well, I mean, look, there are people turning knobs and dials. I feel like the last couple episodes haven't been my favorite on the Mando.
Oh, I still enjoy having such a highly lovely produced fantasy series that's only 40 minutes long. It feels kind of amazing.
Yeah.
While some of the episodes captured me more than others, I still keep finding myself thinking, wait until the series airs and watch it again, because I think it's going to feel different once I see them all,
I mean,
of a piece. Because I'm really enjoying the spit out of the series. I'm finding it a great world to visit.
My enjoyment is living and dying based on whether I enjoy the characters that are the other people in the episodes. Mm-hmm, and some of them, I like the Gina Carano episode was fantastic with the 7-10.
Well, this most recent one with Bill Burr and Clancy Brown, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed I won't spoil this for you, Norm, but I enjoyed the twist at the end.
Oh, we have to talk about this in a spoiler cast. I have a very different opinion of that twist
really?
At the end.
I thought it was, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. To be continued. Yeah.
So that's to be continued.
Are we going to try to do a Star Wars spoiler cast next week? Or are we?
It's two days
before Christmas, so Gina might be really upset with me if I skip out.
Let's figure out when everyone will have a chance to see it.
Okay.
And then we will
as soon as we all get on board. Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Maybe Maybe think for me. Maybe we record a pot. Well, we'll talk about that. Okay. We'll make our calendars off mic and
schedules and tap into our phones when the camera's not rolling.
Indeed.
So Watchmen, non-spoilery part of Watchmen first, and then
non-spoilery part of Watchmen. Watchmen completed its how many episodes?
Nine
episode run. Show run by Damon Lindelof, a host of different directors.
And writers.
Mm-hmm. Starring Regina King, Don Johnson.
Gene Smart.
Tim Blake Nelson.
Jeremy Irons, that wonderful actress that plays Lady True.
Oh, Hong Chau?
so wonderful. Yeah. And wow, this episode, you know, I enjoyed the spit out of this series. I think it's one of my favorite series, both from I think it's one of my favorite series I've seen from both a technical storytelling perspective. Like, I loved all the characters. I love how the world was built. I loved how much they didn't hold your hand. Because having read The Watchmen, so much is filled in for you. And if you haven't read The Watchmen, they don't fill a ton in. Or there's some gaps, I felt like. Or I wondered. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I love the spit.
It's really good.
And also, I think, as social commentary, a really, really powerful show.
It's not just one of the best series of TV I've watched in ever that I remember, really. It is impactful in a way that a lot of this kind of TV isn't. Like, you hear a superhero TV show and you're like, oh, well, I mean, there's a bunch of superhero TV shows out there, but they're all pretty light. Or, you know, in the Netflix Marvel stuff, they were hyper violent, or they were, you know, the hook wasn't, we're going to really make you think about a lot of things that aren't people in masks punching each other.
Yeah.
And that's, I spent more time like this Damon Lindelof has been living in my head for the last 9 weeks.
It's a show.
Free, so
it's a show that Things to Say, which was what Watchmen, the original, which was one of the most Watchmen things about it. And it didn't have the exact thing to say that the original graphic novel had to say.
Well, the original graphic novel was talking about the history of narrative and of capitalism and the Cold War comic books in general.
Exactly. And this touched on many of those things, but did it for 2019.
Yeah.
Well, fear of the, I mean, the one common thread is that both of these are about fear, about people fearing things. It was about fearing the,
well, okay, so
the communists.
So Damon Lindelof talks about how, and again, this comes out of the Watchmen podcast with him in conversation with Craig Mazin, but when he and Jeff Jensen, previously of Entertainment Weekly, kind of decided to go forward with the idea of writing a Watchmen show, one of the first things they did was throw out words that they associated with the original Watchmen series. Mm. And I'm sure fear was one of them, but to say it's about one idea, yeah, no, I don't think it's wrong, but
you're right.
Everyone
absolutely
can take
correct.
Many things about it. You know, one of the big key words they throw out is legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy had to be, you know, original, and like all the kind of things that you would think in the word cloud that go with Watchmen. I think they pulled the right things and then made it their own, including appropriation, because the show itself is an appropriation because it is not sanctioned
material
by the original creator.
Alan
Moore has no interest in this. So
he's not done any interviews about it, about it.
He gives a crap about it.
Right. Okay. Sure.
The reason he doesn't talk about it is to maintain his mental health.
Sure.
That makes him angry to the point that he doesn't want to have anything to do with.
Totally. Right. Yeah.
So the creators of the original Watchmen graphic novel, Alan Moore, written by Alan Moore, drawn by Dave Gibbons. Dave Gibbons has been in a better relationship with the rights holders, mm-hmm. which is WarnerMedia, which owns HBO and DC Comics. Of course, Alan Moore washed his hands of any adaptation of his work, you know, even going back before the Zack Snyder Watchmen, V for Vendetta,
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That might have been the thing that
was the one that pushed him over the edge.
That would have unhinged me. That was terrible.
So
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen,
LXG. So he, you know, the only thing people know about Alan Moore today is he probably voted Labor.
Huge beard.
Yeah.
I know he actually came out. He did a please vote with Labor video that didn't really have
an impact. I will tell you that Neil Gaiman, by every account, and being a friend of his, I can tell you it's true. By every account, one of the nicest human beings alive, and one of the most gracious fan interactors that there ever was, said that he learned everything about being graceful with fans from Alan Moore.
Mm.
When you say, wow, I can't believe you signed autographs for X many hours as long as the line lasted, and he will tell you a story about Alan Moore having done it for longer.
Yeah.
I had suffered the illusion that Alan Moore was simply cantankerous, but the fact is no. With his fans and those things, he is a picture of grace and loveliness, and it's important to recognize that there are all these facets.
But my understanding is that he's so connected to the work that when he feels like the other stuff doesn't other people that are working on it don't live up to it, he just can't mentally.
Well, there's no point, because he wrote what he wrote was for that medium,
exactly,
for that era, and it stands on his own. And I think Damon Lindelof has acknowledged that while he wrote this show and agreed to do the show purely as a fan.
Yeah.
And his big takeaway is, if people watch the show arms folded and like in, you know, and it, when the show aired, when and premiered, and, you know, not trusting Lindelof's ability to wrap up a series and write a satisfying show, if they still didn't feel like it hit the mark, but felt like, okay, I understand that Damon Lindelof loves Watchmen, then that's all he really wanted to get out of this.
He talked about that in the podcast, right? Yeah.
And we have had decades now of different executions of taking the storytelling from comic books and putting it into other media.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen everything from Frank Miller's disastrous Spirit movie, the Zack Snyder films, which take comic books almost as a verbatim form and attempt to just make it moving pictures with live action people.
Exercises in media adaptation. Same with Sin City, Frank Miller to Robert Rodriguez, you know, literally taking the panels there to evoke the emotion for people, you know, taking the power of the image.
Right.
Because the graphic novel, that media is part of the filmmaking process and storyboarding. They share a language,
right?
But it's not the same.
No, it's not the same at all, especially with artists as amazing as Frank Miller and Alan Moore, whose page layouts are legendary in how much they push the form of comic books forward.
Mm-hmm. We've said before, you know, Neil Gaiman pointed out comic books is the only media where the reader chooses and pauses the image and the story, you know, before turning the page to reveal the next image.
You can take as much time studying the images.
Indeed.
In film, you don't get that option.
This was the series. This was the first time I felt seriously. And I look, there's some things that Zack Snyder has done that are surpassingly beautiful. Whatever you think about the films themselves, I mean, some of the imagery he has brought to life has been incredible. But there were so many points in this series, Watchmen series, where I felt like, wow, they really are like grabbing the comic book. There's so many points at which I felt like I was reading a comic book. I was in the season finale last night. I was watching that ship take off from Europa.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler.
We're now in
tiny
spoiler.
Spoiler.
We're in spoilers
I'll
now.
I'll be tiny spoiler here.
Okay.
We're watching that ship take off. All the aspects of that ship, and I'm thinking every one of these shots is like a comic book shot.
And even the delivery of dialogue, I would visualize as a frame in the center of a 9-panel frame.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The payoff at the bottom, at the end of that whole sequence, is the shot, the denouement of his relationship with another character we won't talk about yet.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that.
It was so good.
It was a real cool lens to watch the show.
Clearly, whether that was the extant intention of Lindelof and his creative team, or the buried and wonderful result of them having such fidelity to the original material, because it really does feel, you know, I said this a few weeks ago, that third episode, which is where the narrative conceit is, the entire episode's plot is bracketed by Jean's talking to Dr.
Jean
Manhattan.
Jean Smart, Laurie Blake, doing a confessional, essentially.
Doing a confessional from one of the Dr. Manhattan phone booths, and really giving you this top-level monologue to frame the entire episode. It felt like an original Watchmen comic.
And as the joke, the comedian joke for that, the punchline happens in the finale.
Oh, what is the punchline again?
The punchline is the brick falls and hits God and kills God.
Yeah.
And what happens in the finale?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
spoilers.
Wow. Okay, so
spoilers?
Let's get to the spoilers. The season finale aired Sunday night.
Yes.
I got to watch it last night.
So we were spoilers.
Hold on.
The costume stuff, you don't have to hang up yet.
Yeah.
The costume work on the masked Avengers in Tulsa that were on the cops.
Yeah.
The Russian guy.
Yep.
The
Red
late,
Scare.
Red
Pirate
Scare.
Jenny.
The masked Pirate Jenny at Looking Glass.
Yep.
Like the level of delightful jank in those.
Yeah.
Like the Red Scare's mask never is quite right.
No.
Like Looking Panda. Glass.
Nor do you think you'd have trouble recognizing Red Scare anywhere.
You're like, you're going to see that guy. He's going to be wearing a red and white tracksuit, even if he's not wearing his uniform. No, it's like all of the people that worked on this, so much work went into these costumes, so much work went into these sets. The props, the models, the rocket ships, the flying ships, the return of Archimedes. Archimedes? The Night Owl ship, the one that you licked?
It's not Archimedes.
Archie.
Yeah,
I think it's short for Archimedes, isn't
it? Oh,
it
could be. Yeah. Right. It'll be a hoot.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's something. It's just lovely. It's lovely to see all that stuff done and writ large and made into a real place.
Really agreed. I loved, like, at the top line, I loved the finale. I loved the wrap up of this series.
So, like, famously now, Lindelof said he's only in for one season on this, but maybe, eh?
Never say never.
Never say never, yeah.
They certainly left done. The door open.
I felt like it wrapped up nicely.
It did wrap up nicely.
Spoilers, I think the analogy is given, there are plenty of shows that wrapped up where the characters don't die, and of course they live lives, but would it be as interesting to see what happens next?
I was going to ask, do you want more? In much the same way that the ending is ambiguous, I felt like feelings on that are ambiguous as well.
It's fascinating that you ask. I didn't consider, like, if I had control.
If you had your finger on the button.
My answer would be, if the original production team wanted to make another series, I would want them to make another series.
I want less the what happens after the final shot of the finale here and the next week and months of those people's characters' lives than I would want another 9-episode story with a proper beginning, middle, and end, as they did with this show, set in that world. Maybe not even in that decade, in that time, but to do what they did with Tulsa 2019 and history
and 1919
and do that in the alternate world of Watchmen. I don't necessarily need to know what happens to Regina King's character.
No, like I said, I'm agnostic on that front, but if Damon and the whole team and Regina King wanted to make another series, holy hell, I would want them to make that series. And I think people should pull up trucks full of money and let them do what they want to do.
I think that's the right answer, probably. Okay, spoiler time. I'm not going to, no more false starts.
We're now going to talk full spoilers for the entire series, including the series finale. We're going to be indiscriminate about this. So if you haven't watched the show, you really ought to watch it and then listen to this. And if you haven't watched the season finale, you should stop right now and watch it.
We should have a blue light here.
Oh, so you can fast forward.
Too. I can just make noises the whole time so people know we're in spoiler time.
Okay. Here we go.
Go ahead, Adam.
You know, I have loved Lady True as a brand new character whose position within the cosmology of heroes and villains is unknown until now. And I thought the actress was so amazing in that role, so weirdly believable, like just perfection in terms. Wait, actually, even more believable as a genius gazillionaire than Jeremy Irons.
Yes, 100%. It was the confidence that she had, the wryness of her delivery and the lines they gave her, and especially in the finale, because you do have a flashback to the first time she confronts Jeremy Irons and reveals his legacy, her lineage, the turn where she goes from playing naive to be lured in and a fan of his to saying, well, that's just a rerun, is wonderful acting.
Yes, I agree.
I still love Jeremy Irons' portrayal as descent into Superman Howard Hughes.
Oh, completely. No. It's amazing. And the slow reveal of his bizarro encapsulation in the bubble on Europa and the sending of all of his minions, his Adam and Eves, into the thousands of them to spell out that message. Just an incredible and such a comic book plot, right? The kind of comic book plot is like, well, I can draw anything I want.
The most revealing part of that to me is that Dr. Manhattan thought he was doing him a favor by sending him there.
No, he's punishing him. Oh, well, it was both.
Yeah, he asked for it.
Yeah.
He said, I made a paradise. I created life.
Right.
Do you want to go? Right. I can't be there. Do you want to go? And he sent him there because he was
I got the feeling that he didn't make it clear what kind of prison it was. And I got the feeling that he got Veidt's agreement, acquiescence to go, but that was part of the plan to...
I see. You think Dr. Manhattan's punishing him and knew that he was punishing him.
I'm not even sure of punishment. I think he was literally just removing him from a place he could do more harm.
I mean, the question is, does plot matter in a world where Dr. Manhattan can see all time up until 5 minutes before his death?
Well,
and it doesn't, because he knows exactly what's going to happen the whole way through.
It does, because that's one of the most interesting things about his character, is that even though he has seen everything that happens minus the window where he voluntarily is amnesiac, and also when he's trapped in a lithium cage, he still needs to experience it. It's like determinism in its, you know, ultimate form.
And so there, I saw a headline of an article I didn't go read because internet, but it said, "Does Dr. Manhattan have free will?" Which is actually a totally interesting philosophical question.
And from his perspective,
I'm not sure I agree. And I would point out that I think actually the one bit of free will Dr. Manhattan does, I think this entire series is predicated on Dr. Manhattan's first meeting with Angela Abar and his understanding that in meeting her 6 months after they fall in love, she's going to say, "What are you risking?" And then he is literally going to risk everything. And that I think that the central message of the film is this beautiful description of love as leaving a part of yourself in the people that you're just actually choking me up as I say it. Him leaving the egg for her is both a leaving of his powers with the person most equipped to see the world for what it is and to actually do something good with those powers when
and an
he
acknowledgement
did not.
Because he is unimaginative.
And an acknowledgement of his frailty, that for all of his ability to see everything, he didn't want to be alone when he died. Yep. And she was there with him. It was really incredibly moving.
Do you think he's dead?
Yes.
Oh, I do. Totally.
Oh, yes.
I think he's absolutely dead.
He gets dissipated in the exact same way at the end of the comic. Adrian Veidt traps him in the tachyon beam thing in the basement of the Antarctica layer. He gets dissipated, and then he puts himself back together 5 minutes
later.
Lady
True is much smarter and more capable than Adrian Veidt.
And the device that he's being held in gets destroyed.
By the crushing thing, by the frozen squid. Yeah, so presumably his essence is blasted out back into the cosmos.
Wonderful moment.
There's squids that fall from the sky. We all know that that's fake. We don't know that Adrian Veidt is still doing that for the entire run of the show.
Right.
And then switching to, hey, we're going to weaponize the squids. Very good.
And going back to her performance, the kind of the fit that she throws when they teleport her father away, when they send Veidt to Karnak along with Looking Glass and Laurie. Yep. She is so angry because he's not there to witness her brilliance.
It's the first emotion we see from her.
It is the first emotion we see from her. And frankly, I had one note about that.
Okay.
Which is, I felt that for such a raging narcissist as her, while she shows rage and anger and disappointment and sadness, I feel that rage, that like a blinding, white-hot rage would be the absolute biggest top note of that emotional arc that she would have. Mm. And I just didn't, like, I have seen angry narcissists in my lifetime. I don't ever want to see it again.
Yeah.
But it's real and it's terrifying.
She was not terrifying.
Yeah. And it's the only point in this series where I felt like I didn't see the thing I thought that was the likely thing to happen there. But holy hell, I also loved this aspect of the writing of both her character and Adrian Veidt, of both of them being crazy intelligent, mm-hmm. and the realization that, like, she spun up the 7th Cavalry to believe that they were doing something only to be serving her needs, also to hide herself from Dr. Manhattan.
She has to mask it, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. And Dr. Manhattan, like, being so... She tells him to the minute when the probe is going to fly over Europa, and he never forgets it, even though she says it conversationally. Mm-hmm.
So this is a goofy question. Remember when she goes to the farmhouse and buys the house
Yeah.
From the
what we don't know when that is, but that's the return. That's his return 5 years ago, whenever it was.
Dr. Manhattan's.
No. Her father.
Adrian Veidt.
Yes. Oh, it is.
It is.
Oh, so she kept him in the statue. Oh, because right, the statue was earlier in the thing. Yes. She kept him frozen.
She kept him frozen.
She kept him frozen in the gold.
In the gold until the moment of her triumph.
Ah, so that ship was disguised as a meteorite landing on Earth.
Which was also a call back to the Superman mythology, which is done multiple times throughout the show because of the
Bill
Kansas.
Reeves.
Because they are in Tulsa, but the family that the egg farmers that cannot have children, right, and suddenly they are intercepted. Their mythology, the Superman mythology of the meteor coming from the sky with a life within, is intercepted by Lady True because she gives them a baby. And I think their character names are like something Clark. Their last, it's like the Clark
really?
Family.
Oh, really? Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. So that is, again, part of the meta awareness and subversion of the Superman trope. Yeah.
We're all letting this show wash over us as we're thinking about it.
I literally watched this on the plane at 11 o'clock last night. So it's still real fresh in a way that I haven't had time to think about it.
Yeah, no, I watched it.
Do you think Lori got the moments, the finale moments that she deserved?
I feel
because
like
she was just kind of
keeping
bound
her chained to a chair for the last two episodes is a real waste.
Look, I didn't think that she was any less effective or interesting being strapped to that chair for the last two episodes.
She was just kind of a bystander watching, and she sees that John reacts. Like she has a reaction.
I love
to
that it's her that calls Angela and tells her to get in to shelter.
Yes,
I thought that was great.
Yes,
I love. So I didn't even.
I felt like she was one of the characters that was slightly underserved.
Her moment was in the third episode in the car when Petey, when she says, Petey, explain what I'm all about. And Petey just breaks her down in front of Angela in the car ride in the third or fourth episode. Like that is her scene.
You know, I also, I'm thinking about aliens and I'm thinking about, The Abyss, because I think of James Cameron as being amazing at taking characters that are main characters and like parking them for good portions of a film and have them show up later, like Hicks or the big guy from The Abyss, the guy who
right? The guy with the beard.
So I didn't feel like Jean was being sidelined. I just felt like, okay, she's a witness to this while this stuff is going on. The payoff to the 7th Cavalry, and also actually to realize
and a laughing stock and a joke of a misdirection of a menace that was great,
totally great. And I believe that Will was on top of this entire plan in its entirety the entire time.
Will Reeves,
that he and Dr. Manhattan always knew that the egg would be left there for Angela. And that she was the one, and that's what William is saying to Angela. For all that he didn't do enough. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so that's why I asked: does plot matter in a story with Dr. Manhattan? Because you know the Deus Ex Machina of the story is that Dr. Manhattan in Cal disguise before he lost his memory went to her grandfather and said, hey, you got to go do this in like 10 years and gave him the whole rundown and told him exactly what to do and how to do it. And at that point, you don't have, I don't think plot matters in a story with an omnipotent, omniscient being, although the giving amnesia kind of gives you the out on that.
The tachyon field.
Although presumably he knew what was going to happen after the amnesia ends. He just gets to live 10 years of a normal life, which is really a sweet kind
Which is a real risk. He gets to enjoy a beginning and an ending, which is something that he doesn't actually have.
And the ending is that's why I think he's gone. That's why I think he truly did.
Right. Like his story his greatest ended. Respect to Angela, to their love and romance, is to die, is to have an end to it.
Is to experience it.
Right.
Because I feel like that's his journey is knowing the things is different from experience the things. And that's him answering the chicken and egg paradox. Just because he knows who will fall in love with her doesn't mean he feels those feelings until he feels that feeling in the moment when she goes to defend him against 7th Cavalry.
I love that bit where he turns to her and says, this is the moment I'm falling in love with.
And that is his free will. Like that is his ability to self-actualize, you know, the thing that he knows what is going to happen.
Well, I also think that while he You know that when they interview, there's that condition some people, very few people in the world have, where they can remember every day of their lives. Yeah, Mary Lou Henner is one of them. There's only like 9 documented, right? And one of the things all those people tell you is it doesn't help them do their jobs better. They're not like the best lawyer in the world because they can remember every case file. It's not what you expect. And so I think this is also, the show did this wonderful thing of showing you that while Dr. Manhattan is omniscient, his emotions, like all of us, are still in some ways a mystery to him, his emotional drives. And so for him to realize at that moment and say to Angela, this is the moment I fall in love with you, I believe that's genuinely happening to him in that moment as he's actually taking stock of his emotional state.
Well, and he just feels it for the rest of his life because there's no before or no after.
Right, right, right. And I really liked that. I loved that wrinkle of him seemingly surprised by an emotion.
It's such an impossible character to write. Right? Like
that's why I'm happy he's dead. They don't have to write it anymore.
Well, but also every Watchmen story that's been good to date has been about trying to kill Dr. Manhattan.
Oh, well, it's the Loki problem, right?
Yeah.
I once said to Bill Prady, who used to write for the Muppets, creator of Big Bang Theory and a bunch of other wonderful things, I said to him that Rolf was, in my opinion, the only Muppet with no neuroses.
Hmm.
And he said, no, that's totally true. It's why he's the hardest to write for, and it's why you make him a bartender.
Yeah, he just listens. Wow.
Isn't that fascinating?
I'm just flummoxed. The whole thing, I'm going to go back and rewatch the whole thing with Gina because she hasn't watched any of it yet. She's never read the graphic novel, so I'm fascinated to see how, that's
the big question of, I think, can someone watch the show, read the graphic novels, and then we'll watch the show again.
She saw the Zack Snyder movie, which I think is maybe not helpful, but we'll see.
God damn, I loved it.
I would go back and watch the whole thing again right now. I'd sit down and just do 9 hours, I think.
Yeah. I love the way Looking Glass keeps saying, it's not Mirror Guy, it's Looking Glass.
but that's such a, like, her contempt for costumed Avengers is so, it's such a good character moment on both of their parts.
And when she's delivering the joke monologue in the third episode and she gets to the third act turn where God's speaking to the last hero and she says, God turns to the last hero and cracks his knuckles. Her performance is so phenomenal in witnessing what's going on, right? It's like, I'm trying to think of the show or movie we had recently where a character is brought in just to witness and show the audience what this looks like from the outside.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
My memory is poor.
It will come to me in 5 minutes.
Thank you.
But you're talking about like the post carrier in Clue or something like that, where there's somebody who walks in, rings the doorbell, and you open the front door, and they see a bunch of people standing around with knives and guns and blood all over them, and
right, and it's a way
maid.
For the audience to remember that this is happening in a world, right? And so Jean is the one watching all this with this super jaundiced eye, who still really, really cares as much as she did when she was a costume Avenger, just from a different vantage point. Mm-hmm. And she's crazy. Again, she is also stupid smart. Like
they're all top 10th of a percentile humans, right? Even the kids,
Angela's kids.
Oh God, the look that the older son gives at the end is just
The look he gives as he realizes his mom is Sister Knight
and his dad was Dr. Manhattan. I don't know if he gets that yet, but yeah.
So
there's mystery there that they left lingering. Yeah.
Every now and then I see a kid acting on screen and I think, oh my God, you guys all knew that you wrote this hoping that a kid could carry this idea.
But not only the kid carrying that, but also Angela watching him and seeing him start down the path that she's like, shit, maybe that path I've been on for the last 30 years was bad after all. Oh, by the way, I'm going to go eat an egg.
Well, having superhero or being a superhero and having kids are incompatible.
Well, she didn't start out to have kids.
Right. Even that's what she wanted all along. It's Winston from Ghostbusters.
Who?
Winston from Ghostbusters is the guy who is the, what's going on here? Oh my God, this world is crazy.
Oh, right. Yes. Thank you, Winston.
So
Winston Zeddemore.
I mean, the other thing like the question of whether the costume Avengers are good and bad, and watching Angela's path through that, as beginning with I'm not thinking about this at all, and ending with the thing that created the costumed, the masked cops, which is the beginning of the way this whole thing starts, mm-hmm. is the thing that ends Dr. Manhattan, is a fascinating turn to me. Right, because the White Knight, he's unmasked because of the White Knight, because he instinctively reaches out, he protects mm-hmm. his family
right.
when they're attacked
right.
because she's a cop,
right?
And then like that's the thing that ends Dr. Manhattan.
That turns out to be his downfall.
Yeah, right. Like it's a fascinating like the chain of events. Yeah, the chain of events that ends up with him in Tulsa.
It's a beautifully done plot, right? So like just from a mechanical standpoint, it's an amazing execution of a plot.
Thank you. I was digging and you just pulled me right.
You're exactly right. Like the way in which the loose ends all coalesce to bring the story to its fruition is kind of amazing from a technical standpoint.
I think that's the thing that appeals to me. The characters are lovely. I can't say what appeals to me most. It's one of the things that I love is that for a thing where there's a character to whom plot doesn't matter, the plot is perfect.
Right.
Right.
Now, let's give credit to the actor, Yaya, who portrayed Dr. Manhattan and Cal.
It's exceptional. Yeah. He's exceptional.
And Cal.
Cal,
wonderful actor and a wonderful performance. And when he... also, full marks to him for spending so much of the show naked.
Yeah.
And full marks to a show for showing us some real male nudity, which is rare on television.
Look, you can't make Watchmen without Blue Dong. That's why I think Dr. Manhattan has to be alive.
You know, I'm just like, wow. I felt like I'm watching an important turning point in narrative history.
Can I, you know, we were saying
that sounds like a really highfalutin thing, but I seriously feel like that.
No, I mean, tasteful male nudity. That's unusual.
Do you think the guy who makes those, did you see the article a couple years ago came out about a prosthetics guy in Hollywood who's made prosthetic dongs for actors,
That sounds like the worst fucking job in the world.
So apparently, it was. So remember, Jason Segel is fully frontal nudity at the beginning of Forgetting Sarah Marshall. And he did this interview where he talked about how to do nudity and how you don't want it to be too cold on set. You don't want a lot of shrinkage, but of course, you don't want to be tumescent, as it were.
There's a fine line.
And the way he described it was like, I was thinking to myself, like, wow, I have more questions than you've answered.
Yeah.
And then this article came out about this prosthetics guy who apparently makes flaccid prosthetic dongs for actors for scenes in which they don't want to embarrass themselves on a cold movie set.
I can't imagine.
Wow.
I can't imagine the conversations on dong approval day.
Like, well, the actor
comes in, opens a case, and is like, okay. What do you think? What do you think, Mark Wahlberg?
It brings up a lot of questions, doesn't it? But yes, what is the actor's name that played Cal and Dr.
Yaya. It's a three-part name, but Yaya is his first name.
He kept on reminding me of Delroy Lindo. He could play his son in a movie any day of the week. And oh my God, how great. I was rekindled my love affair with my admiration and love of Louis Gossett Jr.
He's spectacular.
Who, like, I grew up with Officer and a Gentleman.
I watched so much Iron Eagle.
Iron Eagle?
It's the Air Force's version of Top Gun.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it was all F-15s and F-16s.
And he has the best line at the end of the episode where he says to Angela, you know, like, you can't hide behind a mask, right? You can't hide pain behind a mask.
Wounds need air to heal.
Wounds need air. It's a beautiful line.
You had said earlier that you thought Gene Smart got kind of sidelined on the last episode. And I
didn't think so. Norm said that.
Norm did. I think that the line that she gets when the senator has the Dr. Manhattan pants on and is getting ready to go into what ends up being the mulching chamber.
Sting's underwear from...
It's kind of, yeah. She's like, those panties, you look really stupid in those panties. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a delightful burn on the shittiest character in the whole thing. I mean,
and it's also, he's wearing Dr. Manhattan's original shorts.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She's just like, you look like a fool.
Plus, actually, I thought his explanation was fantastic.
Which was?
If I'm going to become totally omniscient, actually waving my dick in their face seems like overkill.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. It's very true. You should watch this.
If you haven't watched it, well, really watch up. It. I don't think that even spoilers would take down the enjoyment of it.
I've watched a couple of the episodes multiple times already.
Really?
I'm interested in going back and watching the whole thing from start to finish, knowing the entire sequence and seeing what's different this go around.
It's yeah. And you know, there were times when I was watching Ron Moore's reboot of Battlestar Galactica and I was thinking, wow, this is some of the most intense social commentary I've ever come across in narrative form. Watchmen was like that times three.
Well, it's 15 years later. Yeah. Too. Yeah.
I think that, you know, Ron Moore, they owe a debt of gratitude to Ron Moore and other people, especially within the science fiction realm, because it really seems to be this great Trojan horse that gets social commentary past your cognitive filters of like, I am teaching you a lesson.
I don't,
in a
this
very
is the, I'm
thoughtful
not gonna
have, way. Yeah. That's way beyond the, you know, rip from the headlines procedural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like Watchmen leaves a lot of opinions unanswered. I think Watchmen has, I think the show itself doesn't necessarily feel 100% one way or the other about mask wearing. I think they're talking about the ways in which it serves and doesn't serve. And while it tends to take a stance against the masks, I think that they're also like, they're not exactly sure how they feel about everything. And that's also extant in the narrative. And I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, I think individual characters feel strongly, like Laurie clearly is a pretty anti the vigilante mask wearer. But most of the rest of the there's an appropriate amount of ambiguity at the ending of the show for a Watchmen, I think.
Yeah,
and that's a good place as any to end.
Yeah. Well, it was a Christmas miracle.
Anything cool in sight this week, Norm? Maybe later this week.
Yes, we actually have a great video. Adam visited the Far Out exhibit at the SF MoMA, in which a few of Adam's costumes are there.
I keep getting these tweets space where suits. People are like, hey, I saw some great spacesuits at an exhibit. I was going to take a picture of them and send them to you. And then I read the tag and saw that they're yours.
Yeah. My sister-in-law had that, sent me that. She's like, hey, does Adam know about these cool spacesuits at the moment? I was like, look at the tag. She's like, oh.
It's a beautiful exhibit. And Joseph Becker took us through it. It was stunning.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
We got some things in the can this week that will air in January. There's some really, really fun stuff being plotted and planned for next year. Seriously, 2020 is shaping up to be a ginormous year for TASSID in all of the fronts that we play in. And I'm really excited to start unveiling the different aspects.
How long are the spacesuits at MoMA, at SF MoMA?
Through January, late 20th? January.
Late January,
yeah,
okay.
January 20th, yep.
So you still have time. Go over your holiday break. Check it out.
The new wing of the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art is fantastic. There's some giant, magnificent Anselm Kiefers in a room real near that. You get to see an entire Tom Sachs suit construction, all of the parts.
Oh, wow.
At the front piece. That's the front piece of the Far Out exhibit. Oh, it's stunning.
I gotta go. I haven't been yet, so I'll have to go.
Yeah. All right. Check that out on TASSID. Thanks, Will.
If we don't get a podcast in before next week, I think we should get in.
We
one.
Should.
We should we'll get in one. Air next week.
Exactly. Yep. And it, you know, could be a Star Wars discussion, or could just be a wrap up the end of the year and decade.
Indeed.
Wow. Right. Yeah, the end of the decade.
All right.
It's been okay.
Stick the landing.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.